Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we are back to bands after an episode of not doing a band. This is a band that, again, fits perfectly within the Soundography structure because prior to this week, I knew exactly three songs by this band that has been around for years. And so I'm glad that this is one where we could kind of explore a band that we didn't, well, at least I didn't know much else about. How about you? You've known a little bit more. I mean, one of the albums, for sure, I know you knew better.
No, I've been a fan of these guys since, I don't know, since probably their second or third album. Second album, for sure.
Okay.
And then from then on, I've kind of always kept tabs on them, so I'm not...
A noob. All right, the band we're talking about is Dead Milkmen. Now, again, this is one. This is another one where I want to ask the question: is it Dead Milkmen or is it the Dead Milkmen? I think it's just Dead Milkmen.
According to Spotify, they are the Dead Milkmen.
Yeah, and I'm looking at their album covers now. They are the Dead Milkmen.
Yes.
Okay,
it separates them from all the other bands that might be Dead Milkmen.
Right, they're not just a Dead Milkmen. They are the Dead Milkmen. Very good. I like asking that question because, you know, when you get bands like Smashing Pumpkins and Eurythmics, you don't want to offend fans of that band by saying, oh, yeah, I love the Eurythmics, yeah, or I love the Foo Fighters, or, you know.
Yeah, or the Metallicas.
Yeah. Lars and the Metallicas. All right, let's talk about the Dead Milkmen. They formed in 1979 in Chester, Pennsylvania. And I'm going to go right off the bat here and say, even if you didn't tell me that they came from Pennsylvania, I'd be able to tell you just based on the accent of the lead singer. You know, it's like, it's that old, give me a cheesesteak with new onions on it. You know, it's like that whole Philadelphia sound. I know it's Chester, but it's,
you're going to be there soon, right?
I'm going to be there in a week. I'm going to be there the day this episode goes live.
Which means Genesis won't come out till a week after you get back.
No, well, Genesis will take more than 7 days. Yes. as opposed to the previous use of Genesis.
Yes.
Which only took 7 days.
So that's a programming note subtly buried, yeah, in conversation, guys.
Well done. Nicely played. So tell me about who's in this band.
So they have names, real names, but they, sure, decided they were going to make stage names. So they had...
Rodney Linderman.
Yeah, and David Schultz. Schultz.
And Joe Gennaro.
And...
Schultz.
Square E.
That's how I pronounce it. Schultz.
And then Dean Sabatino, which, you know, looking now, I can understand why they gave themselves the names they did, with Rodney Anonymous.
At least in the case of Dave Schultz.
Rodney Anonymous, Joe Jack Talcum. I wonder if he looked like powder. Dave Blood and Dean Clean as their stage names. So
I love it.
I am thankful. And I'm wondering if they did that. I don't know. That seems very... inspired by the Beastie Boys, kind of.
Well, Beastie Boys, I'm thinking more, I mean, 1979.
Weren't they a punk band, though, when they first got started? When did they
get started? I'm thinking more Ramones. Like, I mean, you know.
Oh, that's true.
They all, you know, the Ramones all just gave themselves the same last name, like Ween and Blotto. But, boy, I mean, probably, I'm going to guess that at least in the case of Dave, that's a nickname that probably came about earlier than the band. Like, I could see some of these guys being named, you know, giving themselves these nicknames prior to being the band. They're like, oh, you know, hey, this is the name I'm going to go by on stage because no one wants to pronounce what I just pronounced. Schultz. And the, yeah, bummer is I'm going to have to pronounce it. I'm going to have to say that name a few more times.
Oh, yeah, and one of them in really, really disappointingly sad context.
Well, yes. All right. So let's get to it. For 1975 in Chester, Pennsylvania, they separated themselves from others in the rock scene or in the punk scene of the early 80s with their jangly sound, humorous lyrics, and vocal delivery. And it's funny again, you know, we've done Oingo Boingo, we did Sparks. There was somebody else who had kind of a more humorous, I mean, Ghost is kind of tongue in cheek.
Oh yeah. Third Eye Blind. I laugh riot.
Third Eye Blind. Tragically Hip is kind of fun sometimes when they're, not talking about the Canadian problems.
When they're being hip and not tragic.
Right. Exactly. But it's funny. It feels like this season we've tackled a few of these bands that are, not novelty acts, but in the right light, somebody could call them a novelty act.
And oddly enough, it was completely not by design. It was just by listing.
Yeah, exactly. If it were by design, then next week would be Violent Femmes and not Genesis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I feel like Violent Femmes are a direct through line from these guys. Like you could say Oingo Boingo, yeah. Dead Milkmen, boom, right over to Violent Femmes. Mm-hmm. and not bat an eye. While in high school, they created an imaginary band called the Dead Milkmen. They created a mythological backstory and even released homemade cassettes.
So two things. I would love to know the mythological backstory.
I would too. Yeah.
I think that would make a great animated series, mm-hmm. a la like BoJack Horseman or Bob's Burgers, except it's the Dead Milkmen.
Right.
But between 1979 and 84, they released about 20 self-released cassettes. And many of them had titles that we all would come to know and love based on songs and albums in the future. But that's pretty crazy that they were able to churn out that much work in amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, these are kids in high school sitting in a garage. And those first couple albums, they sound like they're still sitting in that garage. I know it was several years after they formed. But there's a very raw sound to them that I really, really like, that I'm surprised I like, because I like a lot of polish and a lot of clarity to my music. And these guys don't have it, and I'm thankful that they don't. And I even feel like something gets lost when they do get some polish and some clarity to their music.
I actually just watched a documentary on Amazon Prime about the history of the cassette.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really interesting. They interview the guy who was in charge of inventing the cassette. He's like in his 80s. Mm-hmm. And they go out and see him, and they talk to all these people who are cassette enthusiasts still and hidden.
When you're watching that, about halfway through, do you have to flip your Fire TV over?
I was watching it on a Roku.
Oh, okay.
But
thanks for clarifying.
Cause that makes the joke better.
Cause that was, yeah, exactly. That now.
It was really interesting though, because they actually made a point of saying that was the first medium you could record your own stuff to at home. Reel to reels are tedious and complicated. And only real enthusiasts would use those, real, people. But the regular home person who just wanted to record something had no way of doing it until the cassette came along. And these guys thrived in that environment. They totally used it to their advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And boy, did they use it to their advantage. So I imagine they had like a little dual cassette recorder and they kept ripping off copies for their friends and stuff like that. I think that's fantastic. When Gennaro went off to college, he met Rodney Linderman, Dave Schultes, and Dean Sabatino. And the first public performance of the Dead Milkmen came in 1983.
So a good many of these songs that they've written in the course of their career, they could not write and or perform nowadays. We'll go ahead and get this out of the way.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get out of the way. I mean, I think you're right. I think that there would be some insensitivity training mandatory insensitivity training they'd have to attend. And I think you couldn't just explain it away, wave it away as, oh, we're just being punk rock. You know,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, there's Bitchin' Camaro where they make the jokes about AIDS and HIV.
Right.
There's You'll Dance to Anything, which has a whole like sampled breakdown. of a slur that we don't
homophobic
use.
Homophobic slur. Yep. Exactly.
Then they have an entire song about taking a group of people to a zoo. And that word they use is one of the more offensive words in today's vocabulary.
It is, yeah. Mentally handicapped, a term, a slur on mentally handicapped people. It's it makes you wonder. I mean, obviously, okay, kind of a different time in the 80s when these things were released. And at the time they're writing it, you know, they're thinking, all right, well, who's going to hear this? You know, we're probably recording this. These songs probably were ones they wrote during the high school days. And you say and do things when you're around your friends in high school that many of us would be embarrassed if people heard out loud. Or
you grow to regret certain things, and it's a shame it's been immortalized in digital format all over the internet.
Exactly. Right. So, no, I'm with you. I think about in the case of the other F word, the homophobic slur F word, I think about the Money for Nothing song by Dire Straits.
Oh, and
I think Mark Knopfler, we learned about this, that Mark Knopfler changed the lyrics when he performs it in concert, but he changes it to Queenie instead of the F word. And I don't know if that makes it, it's not as aggressively insulting, but it's passively insulting, or not passively, like
it's still insulting. It's just a different context of insulting.
Yeah. And the song is, you know, again, maybe we're being over sensitive about it, but I mean, the song Money for Nothing was written from the perspective of a couple of refrigerator movers. And they're portrayed in the song, or at least in the blocky Dactyl Nightmare three-dimensional video, as being just a couple of, you know nothing about today's current pop music climate schlubs. And so that line is written not from Mark Knopfler's perspective and how he feels, but by the perspective of these characters in the in the song. And that's an interesting thing. I mean, you could write a book where one of the characters is ignorant, uneducated, racist, whatever, and says things like this and get away with it just fine because, all right, this is not the way the author feels, but it's the way that this character is written, especially if you write it about a certain time. And a certain embarrassing time in world history. So I wonder if that's, well, we can't really do it with this.
You know, I was just thinking though, I mean, it's the same thing about, you guys were talking about MASH. Spear Chucker Jones is.
Oh yeah. Right.
Exactly this, except it's on TV in a sitcom.
Right. And that could have been a nickname given to somebody in, you know, during the Korean War. Right.
Yeah. The other song that I would be remiss if I didn't mention was Watching Scotty Die, which is a pretty flippant version, viewpoint of view of someone in a hospital not doing very well.
Oh, really? Okay. See, I didn't remember the lyrics on that one.
So, yeah, it's I don't know. I would love to see these guys perform in concert live just so that I could see how they handle some of this stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. Interesting. All right, 1985. Big Lizard in My Backyard, their debut album, that wasn't a mixtape handed out during Biology 3. Big Lizard in My Backyard gained attention from college radio stations with the single Bitchin' Camaro. And I would even say that this is the song that all of us kind of, quote unquote, discovered Dead Milkmen with. I mean, I only know three songs by him, but this is easily the one I know most by Dead Milkmen.
I have to tell you, the song Swordfish on this album is the longest minute and a half I have ever experienced.
Yeah, a little bit, right? It's a little, Help pass the letter. Every day I hear the people groan. Why should we buy postage stamps? We can make our own.
It's a kind of,
I don't know. There was another one too, where it was something. It was like a sampled audio clip, and it was on that first album, a sampled audio clip, and it just kept getting, just was so repetitive. And I can't remember where it is, and I'm already, my library is now sitting on MC Lars, for obvious reasons, and I'm never going to find that song. But anyway, the Milkmen toured extensively and were able to gain a following. around this time. Speaking of, I mean, really quickly about Bitchin' Camaro, because neither of us can really put it on our playlist. However, if I could, I would. I really do like the poorly scripted interplay between the performers, one of whom has a definite agenda of where he wants the conversation to go, and the other one so focused on
the people's
the bass line or the on guitar that he can't answer the questions. You're supposed to ask me how I'm getting down to the shore. Oh, I don't know. I mean, how are you getting to the shore?
And that conversation is so much of its time. It yeah, squarely really roots it right in 1985. There's a People's Court joke. There's a Vince Neil having killed someone joke.
Right.
I mean, it is very representative of a time capsule buried on a cassette in the dirt.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Anyway, and you know, aside from the unfortunate lyrics of the Doors cover band that's playing at the
Crystal Ship,
the Crystal Ship. That's right. Who I think is really a Doors cover band. I think there really is a Doors cover band called Crystal Ship.
I've said this before, but I've played in Doors cover band called The Hinge.
Oh, did you really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Hinge. Are you serious, though?
Yeah, I am dead serious. Okay. I played in college. Right. I played.
See, I don't know. Sometimes I don't know if you're joking or not. It just feels like it'd be a funny name for a Doors cover band, The Hinge.
Nope. Sure enough, I did it.
Knob and the Hinges. Like, you'd be front man would be a guy named Knob. Anyway, all right.
We play at the Skeleton Key.
Did you do Love Me Two Times? You played out of key. Is that what you just said?
No, we played at a place called the Skeleton Key.
Oh, okay.
No, we did that. We did Roadhouse Blues. Yeah, I mean it was fun.
Sure.
I was only with him for about a year, but it was fun.
Not much call for a Chapman stick in a Doors cover band.
I was playing harmonica at the time.
Oh, very good. All right, 1986. They followed that album, Big Lizard in Your Backyard, with Eat Your Paisley. Again, kind of another pretty famous album. I was trying to think. I mean, I remember this album being big with at my high school, because I feel like there was a song that I wanted to talk about on, The Thing That Only Eats Hippies.
Yep.
Yeah. No, there were a few really good songs on this one.
I really enjoyed I Hear Your Name.
Yeah, it's funny. And again, not really any big hits off of this, but I remember this album cover way more than I remember The Lizard in My Backyard, Big Lizard in My Backyard. And I don't know what that means. If that just means more people were listening to it at my high school or what.
Well, and the next album is the one where I jumped on board and never let go.
Sure. And that album is Bucky Fellini, came out in 1987, included a song called I Am the Walrus. But oh, wait, if you're thinking that's a Beatles cover song, no, you're wrong. this is a pretty solid one as well. And this is the one that does feature instant club hit. You'll dance to anything by the Commune. You'll dance to anything by Book of Love. You'll dance to anything.
I think this is by far my favorite album of theirs, and I enjoy it all, with a couple of notable exceptions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. I can't wait to find out what they are. 1987, they released The Thing That Only Eats Hippies as a single. This was their first proper video and single. They name check Bob, Greg, and Grant from the band Husker Du, and later Sugar, old forming band Sugar. 1987, the instant club hit EP, and we talked about the lyrics in that one. Although it's a spoof of club music, it actually became a modern hit. And if you don't recognize it by that title, you recognize it by things like You'll Dance to Anything by Depeche Mode.
And I worked at a dance club in college, and we used to play this, and people loved it.
Yeah, I do. I like it. It's just a fun song to name check all these other 80s bands. Public Image Limited.
And the Communards.
And the Communards.
That's 2 weeks in a row I've gotten you yelled Nards.
Oh, wow. Same way last week?
Yeah,
Okay, good. In Big Time Operator, they call out Stevie Ray Vaughan, ZZ Top, and Charlie Sexton. So a lot of name checking.
I love Big Time Operator. I like Taco Land a lot.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's watching Scotty die is hard to listen to, just because now I'm like, wow, I've been in hospitals with people, and it's not as humorous as they make it out to be.
No. Rocket Ship.
Hey, easy.
Oh, am I doing a little foreshadowing?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll talk about that one. 1988, Beelzebubba came out. This was their most polished album to date. They branched out and used a variety of instruments, including trumpet, organ, accordion, and violins. And on this album, you'll find the single Punk Rock Girl, which brought them more widespread and worldwide success and notice.
This one reached 101 on the Billboard charts.
Just eking out an appearance on the Billboard charts. Also in 1988, they released Smokin' Banana Peel's EP, along with a music video for that one. 1990, the album Metaphysical Graffiti was released. Had some mild chart success, but no singles released from this album. And of course, the title is a play on Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti, as well as the cover art, the album cover art. Again, do we know who hastily drew these album covers for them, by the way?
I don't know, but there are a couple of them that I think are awesome. The Big Lizard in My Backyard is a great album. If I could find a 12-inch of that, I would frame it and put it in my office.
Yeah, I would too. That's such a classic cover. All right, next album, 1992's Soul Rotation. They left Restless Records and they signed with Hollywood Records, which means they're currently owned by Disney, or I guess Hollywood Records has been owned by Disney.
Yeah, from the first notes, it was just too smooth to be a Milkman album.
Yeah, and that changed things for me a little bit. I really, for these guys and the way that they write their lyrics, I don't want, and I talked about this at the beginning of the show, I don't want tight arrangements. I don't want tight musical arrangements or vocals. I don't want multiple takes. I want them to record the first take like they did with Big Lizard in My Backyard.
Yeah.
It just feels like those are all the first take. And it's like, let's just get this thing recorded and get it copied out to our friends. The album itself was more song focused with more keyboards as well.
So the conspiracy song on this album was the second song in their career that specifically calls out Mormons.
Huh.
Makes you wonder a little bit why. Bad experience? I don't know. It's just a strange group of people to continually knock at if you don't have a real
some sort of grudge against them.
Or a connection that no one knows about.
They see a comedy, what they consider to be a comedy gold mine, and they dig into it or something.
Yeah, one of my songs, actually, I picked the other one, but when I heard this, I'm like, whoa, that's, what a coincidence.
Yeah, why more than one song with that?
Yeah.
This whole thing led to a more polished pop sounding album than anything they had done before. And again, no hits released from Soul Rotation. In 1992, the EP If I Had a Gun was released, as well as the following year, Now We Are 10, which was their first compilation album, and the following year, 1993. Also in 93, Not Richard, But Dick was released. This album didn't do any better than the last one, unfortunately. The relationship with the label quickly hit the skids, and the album went out of print.
So Not Crazy doesn't even seem like them. It sounds more like Smash Mouth.
It does. Staring at the toys on my wall.
Yeah,
I I even had to look it up because I wasn't quite sure that that they'd kept the same vocalist, the same main vocalist, the guy who talks about going to the shore in Bitchin' Camaro. And I don't know if it's just that he developed a new vocal style or just the years had changed his voice enough to the point where he was singing differently, but it's a lot, I don't know. It's a lot less approachable. It feels...
It's more polished. It's more produced. It's more shiny.
And I'm bummed about that. Let's see. Because of the contract they that they had with the label, they weren't able to include any of the songs from the last two albums on a retrospective collection or any future retrospective collections. In 1994, they released Chode Rules live at the Trocadero. They did sneak in a version of If I Had a Gun on this album by not listing it actually in the liner notes. Just sneak it in there. Maybe nobody will notice. Later in 1994, they announced the band was breaking up after the tour. One of the listed reasons was tendonitis that Schultes had suffered in his hands, which caused pain when he performed. Another given reason was that they had frustrations with the commercial record industry, seems to be a common.
And I can't blame them after probably what feels like, especially listening to the albums, it feels like Hollywood Records said, okay, you're on a major label now, so you have to be a major label act.
To sound like a major label act. Yeah.
And they probably, and it feels like they shoehorned them into these, what these albums sounded like, because when you get back to the next album, you're right back to where they were. So this, it really felt forced. And so I can understand why they felt weird about those two records and how the whole thing went.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you wouldn't want to go to work every day and record an album with that kind of non-support from the label.
You don't do that to your people, do you?
Of course not, Hammond. my people, my person. In 1995, they released Stoney's Extra Stout, or the Pig album. Restless Records released this after they broke up. They released it posthumously. And then they released several compilations of hits and rarities, which we'll get to in a second.
And I'll be honest with you, this album, like I said, was a total return to the Milkmen of old. But it also had a touch of old style, like, I want a Pepsi Suicidal Tendencies.
All I wanted was a Pepsi, and she wouldn't give it to me. That's another band that I constantly, you know, I put in the same zone as Dead Milkmen. For me, it still wasn't enough regular Milkmen to get me back on the train.
Just a little bit too much, too alive. They needed to be a little bit deader.
A little bit deader. 1997, Death Rides a Pale Cow, which was a collection, the ultimate collection released by Restless. And in 1998, Cream of the Crop, which, another compilation album was released. During what would become a 13-year hiatus for the band, the members followed various musical, educational, and professional paths. In 2003, Now We Are 20 was released. It's another compilation. They also released the Dead Milkmen Present Philadelphia in Love DVD. There were talks of a reunion after those released, but on March 10th, 2004, Dave Schultes committed suicide. The remaining members of the band played two shows in tribute to him, and the proceeds went to various mental health groups and to Studenica. Is that what it's pronounced?
Studenica? Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Which is a Serbian monastery that Dave had supported. And in 2008, they reunited with Dan Stevens playing the bass, replacing Schultes, who had committed suicide. In 2011, they released The King in Yellow, first released digitally on their website, and then a CD was released a little bit later. The vocals kind of, again, continuing to change for me to the point where I'm having a hard time connecting with the music like I did with those first few albums. You know, I hate to be one of those guys. I think there's a thing where we can say, if we listen to all these songs, albums within a week, we can't do the whole, oh yeah, the band was so much better when they did this, right? That feels like the thing you do when you discover the band from their first album. When we listen to it a week, I think we can kind of sidestep those arguments.
Yeah.
We can say, no, this is really where it changed. It really didn't it was really less listenable.
Yeah. No, it really is. It's the effect of binge listening or binge watching. Mm-hmm. You can see when a show changes quality when you binge watch it. And I feel like we've developed the skill as now listeners to say, this demarcates, this is the line from where they ended one era and started a new one, or shifted to be not as good, or lost the fire, lost whatever. But
thing they had, that it thing that they that they had and don't seem to have anymore. Yeah, that's exactly where I think where we have an advantage of being able to do that. All right. Also, the next year in 2012, dark clouds gather over Middlemarch and Big Words Make the Baby Jesus Cry, two singles that were released.
This was the first in a series of limited run singles, and they kind of did this for a while, and these were the first two.
Okay. Yeah, I actually kind of did like Big Words That Make the Baby Jesus Cry. It was kind of a funny, again, I like the lyrics of that, talking about his mom keeping Jesus in a bottle and... Oh, no, that's a different song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I Dream of Jesus, which I did kind of like. I can't remember which album that was on, but that could have made it onto my list.
So, and that's the thing I think that still had held true, is their style might have changed, and they might have gotten older or whatever, but the sense of humor is still kind of there. And it feels like the further they get away from the Hollywood record times, the more sense of humor creeps back in.
It's just so hard to get past those vocals. It's during some of those times, right? It's I like the lyrics. I don't like the way they're sung, and that's a big disconnect for me. I don't know why. In 2012, they also collaborated with MC Lars.
We will cover this later.
Yes, we will. And the next year, 2013, The Great Boston Molasses Flood and Welcome to Undertown were released, and those were also both singles.
Yeah, and this continues in that series of singles that I'd mentioned.
Okay. 2014, Pretty Music for Pretty People, followed by the Prisoner's Cinema single in 2015. Welcome to the End of the World EP, which was just released last year.
I was really surprised how much I like this.
Yeah, there's a really good instrumental in the middle of the album that I kind of like.
Hush.
Oh, geez, Louise, really? See, this is why I don't look ahead at your list. I guess we'll be talking about that soon as well. And then just this year, they came out with Dr. Demento came out with a 3-disc album. Well, 3 discs if you buy it in vinyl, 2 if you buy digital, with covers of classic Dr. Demento songs like Dead Puppies and Fish Heads and stuff like that. And on that album, you'll find the Dead Milkmen covering Lydia the Tattooed Lady. But I can't talk about that just yet. All right. Well, so I'm seeing the next section, which is usually our statistics in general notes.
And we covered their one statistic. They had a song hit 101. And they've released some albums, and they've done some side projects, and that's kind of them. I mean, the Sparks tried really hard not to be obscure. These guys seem to be obscure and try to be obscure.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that if they had the opportunity to have gotten more popularity, they would have balked at it? Or maybe they did?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing, is they went to Hollywood Records, they did 2 albums that didn't sound like them, and then they split. I think maybe they weren't...
The world just wasn't ready for the Dead Milkmen.
Or maybe they weren't ready for the world. I don't know. But it's something... They were handed an opportunity, and it kind of fell apart on them, and they didn't seem to chase it too hard after it fell apart.
Yeah, I think that may be it. That could be it. All right. Well, let's say that you got to see the Dead Milkmen in concert, and you knew during the regular set, there was a certain song they didn't get to, and you knew, oh man, they have to do this in the encore. What song is it? And I think it's a pretty obvious one for both of us. I mean, Instant Club Hit is popular.
Yeah.
You've got a couple of them.
Beach Party in Vietnam, which I didn't realize was them the first time I heard it. And it wasn't until I became a fan later that I realized that was them. And then Punk Rock Girl, which was a moderate success among
certain. It was their 101.
Yeah.
It was their reaching 101 on the Billboard charts.
Yep.
But I think Bitchin' Camaro is the obvious choice here. And it came out early. It's the song that most people know.
They used it in Orange is the New Black.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. All right. Well, hey, Hammond, we nailed it. It is. Bitch and Camaro.
You asked me what kind of car it is. What kind of car do you got? I've got a Bitchin' Camaro.
Bitchin' Camaro! Bitchin' Camaro! I ran over my neighbors. Bitchin' Camaro! Bitchin' Camaro! Now I'm in all the papers. My nose bought me a Bitchin' Camaro.
Their number one performed song in concert, followed by Tiny Town. I think the first song on that first album on Big Lizard, Beach Party Vietnam, which we just talked about, Serrated Edge, VFW Nutrition, Punk Rock Girl isn't seen on here until song number 7, followed by Stuart Dean's Dream and Methodist Coloring Book. See, a Methodist coloring book. It's not Mormon coloring book. They pick on a couple different religions. Just out of curiosity, and it's funny, our friends James and Svet from Same Sex Mary are part of a festival. I think they even organize a festival every year around the time of the Vegas Life is Beautiful pop festival or rock festival. They organize one called Life is Shit, and the Milkmen also do a song called Life is Shit, and I wonder if there's, you know, if that was any inspiration for the Same Sex Mary folks starting that one. And I'm looking to see.
So they perform in concert Little Red Corvette in the middle of Bitchin' Camaro sometimes.
How do you do that in the middle of that song? Like there is a,
if you go
there's
to
a lead up and then like three choruses and a crash and an end.
If you go to YouTube, you'll see how. It's actually relatively entertaining.
A Little Red Corvette.
Come on, right now.
I will totally do that. It does not look like they perform Instant Club Hit in concert. And that does make sense because it's a very different song for them. And it's drum machine, you know, and repetitive bass guitar. So you could almost see if they are going to do this, this is when the, here we go. They play it as a combination Swordfish and Instant Club Hit. So you'll really like that. But it looks like they probably do that, you know, as they're getting the band costume change or something. I don't know. They do a lot of covers, though. Gene Genie by David Bowie. What Am I Doing Hanging Around by Michael Martin Murphy. Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. I gotta go check out that Prince cover, though. That's really cool. The Gilligan's Island theme.
Yeah, Blues Traveler does that, too.
Okay. Don't Fear the Reaper. Get Off My Cloud. Definitely going to go check out that link that you're going to give me. Let's get to, speaking of covers, let's talk about who we'd like to see them cover. And
so we both picked a similar era of music. Did you notice that?
We both picked a song that begins with the same number.
Yes, but also they came out within just a couple of years of each other.
Being a big Queen fan, and I'm again can only say that so I don't step on your toes too much, but
you couldn't see that happening.
I couldn't see that happening. I put these, they may have come out on the same day, and I'd put them in different ends of my IKEA shelf that I put my records on. The first song that I picked, and I feel like especially their early stuff with a lot of talking and a lot of, you know, the lyrical delivery. One Night in Bangkok by Murray Head, I think that they could really do something fun with. I mean, come on, if Mike Tyson can cover that song, we know their version is going to be far better, right? The chord progression is nice and simple, right in their wheelhouse, and I think it would be a really funny song to hear them cover.
Especially that part about they're getting the kicks above the waistline, sunshine.
Right, exactly. So again, far better than the way Mike Tyson covered it.
Yes.
And they'd probably be able to pronounce cerebral instead of cerebral.
Yeah. No, I actually think yours is a pretty good pick. I picked a Queen song. I picked mm-hmm. One Vision, made famous by the classic film,
Iron Eagle.
Iron Eagle, yeah.
Yeah. Good old Louis Gossett Jr. in that Top Gun knockoff from 1986, I think.
Yeah. So the reason I picked this is because I really do think they could break it down and give it a very simple arrangement. And then because the lines mm-hmm. are super staccato, it's one or two words per stanza. Mm-hmm. I feel like
one heart, one soul, one vision.
Yeah, I feel like they could really do a good Milkman version of it because it's so, mm-hmm. so kind of staccato-y kind of deliverance. Plus, there's that guitar solo in there, which, based on how the guitar solos go, could be hysterical.
Oh, totally. And I feel like they could probably do the fried chicken. They would do the fried chicken line throughout the song as opposed to singing
the end.
One Vision.
So I know I'm treading on sacred turf, but I feel like they could do a humorous and well done version of it.
Yeah. I really would be curious to see what they do with something like that. I'm not at all poo-pooing it. I think I'd like to see it. Anyway, very good. Okay, now we're going to get to our playlist. And finally, we can talk about some of these songs that Hammond won't let me talk about. But first, I'm going to talk about the songs I want to talk about. First off is a track that comes from Beelzebubba. I think this might be my favorite Dead Milkman song that is not something I couldn't include because it's a greatest hit. Because I really like Punk Rock Girl. The lyrics, you know, if you don't have any Mojo Nixon, then your store could use some fixing. It's like they just don't even care about how many syllables there are in one verse. Completely, whatever. That's how many it is. That song is Beelzebubba's My Many Smells, the song from the album Beelzebub.
Back into your toilet on a warm summer day.
Or Beelzebubba. Just really funny lyrics. Like, you know, talking about these horrible smells that he has, like a bathroom just after your grandma used it. And she'd been eating prunes. And when there was a workman strike or a garbage man strike and horse flies were 3 feet long or something like that.
So the first thing I thought of when I saw you chose this was Scott Johnson and how he describes people with smells.
Yes, for sure.
And this could be reworked into a Scott Johnson song.
Totally could. Yeah. Every line would be about a grandma, though, I think.
Or Jennifer Aniston's Milk Breath.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Sometimes I smell like Jennifer Aniston's breath after she drank a banana milkshake or something like that. I can hear it now. I kind of love it. Next one is Right Wing Pigeons. Also, or no, that's from the Big Lizard in My Backyard album.
What could make them think that way? What could make them act that way? They're just a right wing pigeon from outer space. Send it to destroy the human race. They don't give a damn about you or me. They just buy guns.
I don't know why it is. This one came up a couple times for me. I listened to the albums all the way through, and then because of the way Apple Music works when I'm in my car, I can't just say, you know, I can't go into the music app, find Dead Milkmen and see the albums. I don't know why it doesn't work, but it doesn't work. So what I do is I say, hey, S-I-R-I, play some music by the Dead Milkmen. And what she does is comes up with a playlist pick just for you. And this one came up a bunch in that playlist, or, you know, came up the couple times I did that. Because usually what I'll do is I'll listen the first song or two, and then when I get to my destination and I'm getting ready to drive back, I'll just go to Dead Milkmen from that link from the album it pulls up, or the song it pulls up, and then play albums from there. But for whatever reason, Right Wing Pigeons just kept coming up. And I feel like it's a poignant song for being something that's 33 years old. they may not be Right Wing Pigeons from outer space, but there are some Right Wing Pigeons out there. And I think it's a really funny line. The next one is a beach song, also from Big Lizard.
I don't want to be on the beach now. I don't want to be on the beach now. I don't want to be on the beach. I don't want to be on the beach now. I hate my girlfriend. She lies on the beach like a barrier reef. Soaking up.
I don't know why, but I can't get enough of, you know, when they're singing, I don't want to go to the beach, the lead singer goes, no fun. And I just love the way he shouts no fun during that song. It just, I sing along with it. And, even though I like the beach, I sing along, with great joy in my voice. The next one is Bohemia, which comes from the album King in Yellow. Just for the line, I put this in my playlist as soon as I heard the line, I don't get Nora Jones. I don't know why, that line just is great. And again, it points to the great lyrics, maybe not the great vocals in this album, the later albums, or the vocals that were as fun to listen to as they are to pay attention to the lyrics. And I may not agree with it. I do get Nora Jones. I like her music a lot, but it's a really funny foundation to build an entire song song around.
So maybe they could do a song called Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah, maybe. I think that's where that comes from. I mean, I think they're already saying Bohemia and just saying Bohemia. But that would be funny to hear them do. See, there you go. There's an act that could pull off a Bohemian Rhapsody just in doing one style of music. I've always said that Bohemian Rhapsody is a tough song to cover because you almost need a different style of music for each section of it. I feel like these guys could cover it all with that same Bitchin' Camaro style. And it would be kind of funny. It would be like, is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? I don't know. Caught in the landslide. It would be really good.
No.
Right. Very good. Perfect. And then Lydia the Tattoo Lady. We talked about this, the song that they covered on the Dr. Demento tribute album.
Eyes that men a dorso and a torso, even more so. Lydia, yes, Lydia, the encyclopedia.
It kind of became a song for Groucho Marx, although it was written and performed initially by Yip Harburg and Harold Arlen. But it's a song about a woman who's got so many tattoos on it, you can kind of learn history by just checking out her tattoos. She's got like the Battle of Waterloo and I don't know. It's just a really funny song. I kind of think of two things when I think of that song. One is Kermit the Frog. I remember the episode of the Muppet Show where Kermit the Frog sings it, and it's not Miss Piggy, but it's a tattooed pig, tattooed piggy puppet Muppet that has all these tattoos. And then I also think of Jesse Plemons, who, played this character named Todd in Breaking Bad, just this scary character named Todd. and had a crush on this woman on the show named Lydia, and her ringtone when she would call him was Lydia the Tattooed Lady. And
you know,
so that's the other thing I think of.
I've never watched Breaking Bad.
Well, when we finally get around to doing our Lost show, after that we'll do Breaking Bad. How's that?
Okay, plan.
One is a lot heavier than the other. Because I found out that my number four track was not on Spotify, I threw in another one that probably also isn't on Spotify, but I don't know. Maybe it is. And it's a cover of the Yardbirds' Shape of Things. That they included on that compilation, Now We Are 20. And the fact that Dead Milkmen do two covers makes me want to include two covers in my list. But that's a great song. That's such a great Yardbirds tune.
Yeah. All right.
To your playlist, sir.
All right. So we've covered my favorite album that they did is Bucky Fellini. My favorite song on that album is Jellyfish Heaven. Because you go to Jellyfish Heaven to get away from Mormons and drunk Eskimos. And Jellyfish Heaven is a lot like L.A. The lyrics are just so silly. And it's so weird. And it makes me giggle all the time, especially when I introduce it to somebody who doesn't know what they're getting into. Hey, check out this Dead Milkmen tune. They know Bitchin' Camaro. I put this on. It's great watching their face as they try to process what they're hearing.
Totally. I feel like, too, by the way, like both of us started off our playlist with our favorite lyrics in a Dead Milkmen song.
Yes.
So that's kind of cool. Yeah. All right. Keep on going.
All right. My next one is their collaboration they did with MC Lars. It's called Mr. Raven.
Mr. Raven, all up in my grill with the Nevermore. It's MC Lars and the Dead Milkmen. I'm rapping with some legends of punk rock. Yo, Rodney Anonymous. Let's flow like Poe. Here we go. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I kicked it, weak and weary, dark and cold, just like Lake Erie.
And it's very much a Mr. Lars song, or an MC Lars song, but it also has a lot of Dead Milkmen in it, and I really think it's awesome. It's one of my favorite collaborations of this type of music ever. Mm-hmm. I bought it sight unseen. My kids love it. I love it. It's got great literary references throughout. It makes me feel smarter because I get them. And I can say it clocking in at just about 4 minutes. It probably is the Dead Milkmen epic.
Yeah. And I like it too. As far as like their most recent releases, that is something I really can get behind. I really like.
Yeah. And then Brian almost blew this one up for me. It's called Battery Powered Rat. From End of the World. It is mostly instrumental.
This is the instrumental. Yeah. That's right. Okay.
It has a great arrangement to it. And it kind of shows what the older, more mature, I guess you could say mature, Dead Milkmen can do when they put their actual talents to something other than being funny.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I did too. That's a good song.
Then I picked Rostabilly from Big Lizard. This is a funny, catchy little tune about his girlfriend.
My baby's got two elbows. My baby sure has a nose. My baby, she's got 10 toes. And my baby's got a couple of those.
And all the things that she is and is not in his life. And it's for lack of a better word, it's just cute.
Mm-hmm.
And then I picked again from Bucky Fellini, Rocket Ship.
I'm going on a trip far away. I am leaving today.
And this is another one that is just a silly, not important song about a kid leaving on his rocket ship. There is no hidden messaging. There is no subplot. It is a kid singing about his rocket ship. And it's it's just that easy and just that fun.
And that song, by the way, is credited to Daniel Johnston, like an alternative music artist from, I guess, the 80s, 90s. I mean, obviously 80s for this one, but so I don't know if it would, I don't know if it's a cover. I don't think it's a cover.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I think it, if anything, then he might have just helped them hammer out details. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. But it's interesting that one's credited to him, and I don't know what the connection is.
But there, I mean, Buckley Fellini, like we said, is a big time operator where he calls out all the ZZ Texas MFers, and then Taco Land is really good. It's just, that whole album is just fun. That's them at their best before they got tainted by Disney.
Yeah, I'd agree. I would agree. Totally. Very good. Well, there you go. There's 11 songs, 10 of which we think are on Spotify. At least a majority of those you're going to find on Spotify. Yeah. That you can combine with one of the greatest hits collections and get yourself a very good, deep, Dead Milkman compilation right there.
Yeah, Death Rides a Pale Cow is really good, except it doesn't really have any of the Bucky Fellini stuff on there that I like. So,
really?
Yeah, I bought Death Rides a Pale Cow and then Bucky Fellini.
Yeah, that's a good combo. Yeah, I mean, it's got instant club hit, but yeah, all right. Yeah, that's a good combo. Bucky Fellini and Death Rides a Pale Cow. All right, well, let's think about 2 weeks from now, Hammond, and the band called Genesis. What? Genesis? You guys already did Genesis. I can hear you saying in your car as you listen to us. We only did half of Genesis. We did the first half of Genesis with Peter Gabriel, and now we're going to kind of bookend this season, because it is our last episode of the current season. We're going to bookend it with the second half of Genesis. God, that's confusing. Somebody should diagram that sentence. The second half of Genesis, which is Phil Collins half of Genesis. Peter, Paul, and Phil, apparently, is what I was trying to turn Genesis into. Phil Collins. So we're going to be doing the second half of Genesis's releases with Phil Collins. And then we're going to be also listening to some of Phil Collins' solo stuff and calling all stations, because it's a Genesis album that features neither Phil nor Peter.
That's right.
How long are the songs in that one?
I don't know, but it does feature former Spockbeard drummer Nick DiVirgilio on drums, filling in for Paul. Now you got me doing
that. Paul.
For Phil.
why is it we both want to call him Paul Collins? I don't know why, but we both want to. Expect a lot of that next episode, Paul Collins. There you go, though. That's going to do it. If you want to get in touch with us and tell us why his name really is Paul, you can email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We say some really funny things on Twitter. And, you know, instead of just saying our The Soundography Twitter account, I'm also going to say that you can follow me at Coverville, and you can follow Hammond at jhammondc. Is that right?
Yeah, it is right.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know, because my Twitter autofills whenever I mention you, so that's why I say that. Everything else, though, soundography.com is the place to go. It's our website where you'll find an archive of all of our old shows. You can listen to every episode we've ever recorded from Duran Duran all the way through to Sparks. And what a direction that will take you.
Actually, Alan Parsons is on there too, which is our Pilot Zero episode.
What is on there? What?
Alan Parsons.
Oh, Alan Parsons. Yeah. Oh, that was a great show. Anyway. All of those are on there, and you'll find show notes for every episode that includes an album that we link to on Amazon, where you'll find a good collection of stuff. You'll find our Spotify playlists when they're available, as well as a way to support the show with Patreon. Become a patron, and we're actually going to be introducing a couple extra new levels of Patreon support very soon. If picking a band is a little too pricey for you, we might have some other options for you that you might like just as much. So stick around for that. Also, that'll help us during the hiatus after between seasons, right? So we're just about to end the current season. We got a new season coming up soon. But between points A and B, we don't want you to go without Soundography. So we're still going to be around doing stuff for you guys. So check that out as well. And of course, if you have a review for the show, oh, if it's good, we want you to tell the world. And if it's bad, we don't want you to tell anybody but us, but we want to hear about it. Leave your reviews on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, and a whole bunch of other internet sites that really just sound like made up words. Anything to wrap us up, Hammond?
You know, I feel like that they've taught me that I will dance to anything.
You'll dance to anything by Genesis, you prog hole. On behalf of Emma Chamberlain, this is Brandon saying, we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.